slip back along again, directed in by Gianta. Kovalchuk moves in after it. Gianta comes by, came up with it in center. Score! Carter on the centering pass from Gianta, and it's 4-3.
Lots of things going on here. Ryan Carter, the eventual goal scorer, is over here. But watch the pressure by Ilya Kovalchuk and then Steven Gianta. Gianta there right to the front of the net, and no chance for Henrik Lundqvist.
Welcome to the Bets and Quotes podcast, a podcast for the Rubes, by the Rubes, talking all things Power Trip. Bets and Quotes is hosted by Chuck, better known as Power Trip Bets, and Dave, the one and only Power Trip Quotes. They were going to get an apartment together and see how things went, but settled on a podcast instead. Our legal disclaimer is simply that Lawyer Lambert probably likes us better than you, so good luck suing us. We hope you enjoy this episode, but if not, feel free to play Jax on 494.
Welcome to the Bets and Quotes podcast. I'm your co-host, Chuck.
And I am Dave.
And Dave, well, you know, we did rampant speculation on Friday, about Friday's initials thing that Corey was announcing. And I guess we offered it. We had six guesses, and we didn't exactly hit it.
You know, Chuck, I think this is your fault, because you're the gambling guy. You should know that they were going to do a progressive jackpot.
I know, like, who doesn't love a progressive jackpot? I chase them all the time and never hit them. But this one, I don't know that people realize just how long this is going to take to hit. In my, you know, professional opinion, I had Power Trip Initials send me a bunch of the stats that he has around initials combinations, and then I just applied some general, you know, basic probability to it. Had to make a lot of assumptions, because you never know how people are going to guess. You could have people that are going way off the board for initials. They could be doing chalk initials. You never know. But
they could guess 69.
They could. And so it's hard to know. It's not one of those things where you can calculate an exact probability. But, you know, I threw some really good assumptions at it. And I came up with an over-under that it's going to take approximately 123 attempts to hit.
Wow. So,
and that might even be a little bit low based on some of my assumptions. And so, yeah, so that, if that's true, that puts the date at September 9th, 2022, when the person who hits it walks away with $61,500.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's big radio prizes. $61,500 is a huge life-changing amount of money for a lot of people.
Oh my God. I mean, congrats. Hats off to St. Paul Federal Credit Union.
Oh, no kidding.
$100 a week?
Yeah.
Like, I figured they'd start at with, I mean, do like 100 and into 200, like 100 every week.
Yeah.
I mean, even like if it went on for a while and someone hit it at like $7,500, like, that's still a huge deal. But we're talking, I mean, there's a good possibility that it could hit triple digits. Six figures.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's probably, I would say, at least a 30% chance that it will hit $100,000. So, yeah. So, hopefully, we'll get through. I don't know what my strategy is going to be if I actually do get picked to give it a go. But, hope I can try. The absolute, the worst case scenario odds for you are 1 out of 686. But realistically, it's more like, you know, 1 out of 400-ish, like, probable combinations. And then there's some that are more common than others. But yeah, it'll definitely a great bit, and it's definitely going to keep the level of interest up in the initials. So it's so very
Chuck,
exciting.
We need to, since the guys aren't making bets on the show, we need to do another Caniac bet.
What's that?
Over under when it gets hit, and you set the number. What was the number again?
September 9th, 2022 at 61,500. I will give you either side, because I think that's a pretty good number.
You know, I have faith in Power Trip Nation. I'm going to take the under.
All right. Well, like I said, if I made the assumptions, if I was a little more aggressive with the assumptions, it was definitely on the downside. So I give myself just a slight edge in this bet. But we'll see. I don't know. They could go straight chalk and hit it right away. You never know. But wow.
Look at Power Trip.
Bets and Power quotes. Trip
Bets and Quotes After Party Pod. Bets and Quotes Podcast. Greg, get on it.
He's on it. All right. Well, we got a couple shout-outs to do today for our Patreon users. So first up, Spencer L. Thank you so much for your support, Spencer. And the aforementioned Power Trip Initials is also one of our Patreon supporters. So thank you so much, Brandon. Really appreciate your support as well, and especially all the work that you do, because I've said many times, what you and I do for the Power Trip pales in comparison to the effort that Brandon puts into it with the initial stuff. And it's always amazing to see the stats that he comes up with. His website's fantastic. And then, yeah, even when you need stuff beyond his website, he's more than happy to email it to you or let you know the answer. So thanks, guys, so much for your support. The website is patreon.com/betsandquotes if you'd like to support us out there. We have a big show tonight, not in the quantity of things we're going to talk about, but in the quality. We're going to do a bets update and the quotes of the week, of course. But then we're going to talk to Ryan Carter, good friend of the Power Trip, former NHL hockey player, Mankato State alum, just all-around good dude. We are going to talk to Ryan, so I know you guys will enjoy that and want to stick around for that. But we'll start, as always, with a bets update. And we actually have some this week.
Ooh.
Here's this week in Power Trip Bets.
Power Trip Bets. Power Trip Bets.
Power Trip Bets.
Power Trip Bets, though.
Where's Power Trip Bets when you need them?
Ask Power Trip Bets.
Is Power Trip Bets drunk?
You want to bet?
Ooh. All right, yeah, we actually have some bets to talk about this week. So first up was the Rashad Bateman bet. So the Mel Kiper put Rashad Bateman as number 8 on his big board, and that spewed talk of, is Rashad Bateman going to be a first rounder? And Corey started out by saying, you know, if I put the over-under at like about 22 or 23, which side would you guys be on? And they were both on the over. So Corey upped it a little bit and just made it a straight first round pick. And Corey and, Hawk and Sauce both didn't think he would be a first-round pick. So Corey bet them each $100 that he would be a first-round pick. I thought the most interesting response to my tweet came from Blake Barrett, who is a local NFL agent, who simply responded to the tweet with, whoever has the, he said, I'm not sure who has the not a first round pick side of this, but you might want to start negotiating your way out of the bet. So, so Blake is pretty confident that Rashad Bateman's going to be a first rounder. So I don't know. Anything can happen in a year. Guys fall in and out of the first round all the time, but you know, he looks like the elite wide receiver for next year. So I think Corey's sitting pretty good, because even if only get 3 or 4 wide receivers get drafted, you figure there's a good chance he's going to be in that group.
Well, and think about it, too. I mean, there's technically a possibility that there's no college football. If there was no season, he's already at the top of the board, adding that in there. It seems crazy to think that a University of Minnesota Golden Gopher football wide receiver would be a first round pick, but he is a hell of a talent. Obviously Tyler Johnson was as well, but I think Bateman is more of a prototypical, you know, NFL 2020 kind of a player. Very quick, plays inside. So yeah, there's a good possibility. I honestly think that Corey's side of this should be plus money. Probably plus 130, but I don't know. All the experts and whatever Blake, the NFL agent, thinks that that it's a lock on the under. So I'm cheering for him. I hope he gets picked number 1 overall.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. And yeah, it is really cool to see Gophers getting drafted and drafted highly as well. So that's pretty darn awesome. The other bet started over the weekend on Saturdays with Sauce when Nordo and Sauce were talking about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And Sauce bet Nordo $100 that the Buccaneers would not make the playoffs next year, even though they are favored at this point to be a playoff team. Sauce put $100 straight up with Nordo that they would not. They then brought that bet up on the air Monday, and Hockey jumped on that as well, and he wanted $100 against Sauce that the Buccaneers, Hockey feels they will make the playoffs, so he bet Sauce $100 as well. So Sauce has that bet against two different people. You know, it's really interesting because I am surprised that the Buccaneers are as big of a favorite as they are. I think, you know, like minus 260, minus 280 to make the playoffs is the number I'm seeing for them around most sports books. And, you know, you think about it with it being in the same division with the Saints, the Falcons, and Carolina, none of which I think are awful teams. In fact, I think all three of those teams could contend for the NFC North title this year. I think their division is so much better than the NFC North that, and Brady did not look good down the stretch last year. I know he'll be motivated, he'll have Gronk, but it's really going to be an uphill battle for the Bucs to get to a number where they actually make the playoffs, because I don't see them beating the Saints out for the division, so then you're talking about two spots, well, I guess technically three spots with the new NFL format, but three spots up for grabs, and a lot of things have to go right, and you got to stay healthy. I'd probably be on Nordo's side just because, on a straight up bet, I think he's getting tremendous value. But I don't know. I don't think it's as much of a lock as like minus 260.
No, I personally think that the NFC South is the strongest division in the NFC for sure. I guess maybe a second closest would be the NFC North, I guess, but the Falcons competing with the Falcons and the Saints, and you got to think the odds that both wild cards come out of the same division are kind of low. So probability says that only two teams will come out of there. I personally kind of eliminate the Panthers just with kind of starting over with a new coach and a new quarterback, and I think there'll be a curve there to learn. And, I mean, did we not forget that Tampa Bay's defense is god-awful?
It's horrible. That's why they're so good on the over.
Right. Yeah, locking that over. I know, I think betting against Tampa Bay all year is going to provide some tremendous value.
Yep, I think so, too. So we'll see how much Brady, how much of a Brady bias there is and how long it lasts. So yeah, good bets. We got quite a bit of action this week. So that was good. A couple $100 bets involving multiple people. So that's always good. That will do it for the bets update. It's time for the quotes of the week.
They're memorable. They're timeless. They'll probably get meat sauce fired. It's time for the quotes of the week.
Power trip quotes. Power trip quotes.
Power trip quotes.
Power trip quotes.
Power trip quotes.
All right, friends, it is time to get to the quotes of the week. And we will start at number three with Zach Double Fistin Daniels.
Yeah.
How about that? Didn't know that.
Virginia used to be huge.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Thanks, Zach.
Wow.
So I think just the cadence and, the whole Zach being sleepy and, alleged weed user. That just made me laugh so hard I had to at least throw it in there.
Yeah, I think the stoners like that line.
Yeah, it used to be huge. I was going to try to do an experiment and listen to it at half speed on the podcast, but I'm kind of scared that I might lose some brain cells.
You might still be listening to it.
Exactly right. Yeah, just echoing around the room. All right, we will move to number two, and it's the gentleman, John Kreisel.
I know I use this often, so it might be overplayed, but I legitimately would rather take a Humvee ride through Fallujah again than take a flight on Spirit Airlines.
Wow! My favorite line you've ever used.
Now, I am very glad that he prefaced that, because that has been a line that he's used very often in the Power Trip quotes world. Any dig on Spirit Airlines is going to catch my ears.
Very well played.
All right. Well, the number one quote of the week goes to our good pal, Meat Sauce.
What if I meet a lot lizard named Little Debbie?
Well, then you're well. Then we have to plan a wedding.
And I guess. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. I think both of them, you know, once in a while, I tag everybody who says the quote just to kind of push it out there. But I think both of them retweeted that one because they enjoyed it so much as well. So that was kind of a no-doubter.
Yeah, it was a good line. Very quick.
Yes. All right. Well, there are your quotes of the week.
It's time for the weekly segment of Your Thoughts. Copyright Dark Star.
All right. Well, this week in Your Thoughts, we've got our Ryan Carter interview. So let's get to it.
And now, here comes another award-winning Bets and Quotes interview.
That was a hoax, right?
All right. We are excited to be joined by former NHLer Ryan Carter. Not only is he a Stanley Cup champion, veteran of Mankato State, but most importantly, he's a Rube and a friend of the Power Trip. How are you doing today, Ryan?
Great. Better now because that intro put a pretty big smile on my face. I like that. Most importantly, Rube, that's fantastic. But yes, no, I'm great. Thank you.
Well, we are in the midst of the quarantine right now, and I know you got a house full of girls. How has quarantine life treated you with all the girls around?
You know, gosh, on the surface, it's really easy to get to get frustrated. You know, we're at least at the start, it felt like we were locked inside four walls. It was early in the spring. The weather wasn't fantastic and we couldn't get outside a bunch. So maybe, you know, in the fact that I had to do some things professionally and get video and have the house quiet and stuff. I mean, at times it was frustrating. And then with school canceling and all the other stuff, and now all of a sudden juggling a bunch of hats, right off the bat, it was certainly an adjustment and one that I probably didn't make quick enough. But, you know, there's really been some silver linings to this lockup. You know, we eat dinner at the table every single night and we're in tune with what's going on. And where the children at first, or I should say throughout their history, have not been overly sharing or have had the patience to tell us about what they're learning at school. But wearing a teacher's hat from time to time, you know, we're in tune with all of that. So really, in some ways, it's brought us together a lot. And the girls, when they're playing now, they're learning to play with one another. They don't have friends. They have to respect each other, knowing that if they don't, they're, you know, they're going to be playing by themselves and a little bit lonely. So, you know, it's we've grown to be a little bit more accustomed to it. And there's certainly been some silver linings, but we've also had some days where I've gotten a few more gray hairs, if not lost a few of those.
So what's the subject when you have to be a Mr. Teacher that you absolutely dread to teach?
Well, that's a good question. So it's also really scary if, you know, the future of, well, at least my family and maybe even, you know, the country. If I'm teaching people, that's not a good thing. Because people rely on me to pass on my knowledge. So, but round this out, I was just outside for art and we were painting rocks and I was the rock. So yeah, no, so yeah, I do the best I can. You know, mathematics and art are probably and you know, Phi Ed are probably the classes that I'm strongest at teaching. My wife pretty much handles all the heavy lifting in terms of getting the kids to learn all the important stuff though.
Sure. Well, speaking of your creativity here, with the league shut down and your current duties here for Fox Sports North and Wild.com, what have you been doing to create content?
Well, you know, gosh, and flying by the seat of my pants is the real answer. Trying.
Yeah.
You know, I've coming into quarantine, I wasn't the most tech-savvy individual by any stretch of the imagination. But now I find myself on conference calls and trying to work through how are we going to deliver some of this content or capture some of it remotely, and I've quickly become an expert. But you know, just trying to catch some stuff, some video on Zoom. I think in terms of consumption of content, video is really where it's at. And you know, we try to get some engaging stuff. And quarantine, it's been nice too, because for me, I'd say my sweet spot in content is a little less analytical, a little bit more, you know, personality driven, and trying to hang out and be a little bit more entertaining that way. And quarantine, I mean, there's no hockey, so we don't really have to talk hockey. We just brush over what it looks like. And I really get into the fun stuff. And, you know, in try to bring out the personality of some of these players, or maybe find a way to be the bridge and have these guys open up and trust a little bit and show people who they are as people on top of, you know, athletes.
Sure. All right. Well, enough negativity. I think everybody by now is sick of talking about all this COVID stuff. Let's get a little bit into your playing career. Of course, you played at Zach Helverson's White Bear Lake High School, where you had some success there. Unfortunately, no state tournament game wins. I know that's a little too soon. But then you played 2 years at Minnesota State Mankato with NHL All-Star David Backes. Did you enjoy your time with the Mavericks, and how was it playing in the WCHA?
Yeah, I thought we were going to get away from the negativity, and now you want to talk about my playing career? White Bear Lake. I mean, I've got fond memories, and I was fortunate enough to have good coaches, good teammates along the way. Mankato certainly, you know, Mankato holds a special spot for me because I think that's where I learned that I had the chance to be a player, like a good player. I grew up trusting everybody that said, well, you know, very few people make it to the NHL, so just make sure that you study and you work on just maybe trying to get your school paid for. So for me, the end game was always just to play Division I hockey, and the people and the coaching staff and the opportunity that was given to me in Mankato really helped illustrate to me that, hey, man, maybe I have a future and I could make a career or make a job out of playing hockey. Because in all honesty, I had going into school in Mankato, I had no aspirations of playing in the NHL because I just didn't think it was possible.
Did you get recruited by any other schools other than Mankato?
Yeah, so I would get recruiting letters, and I think I was a decent high school player. I was a Mr. Hockey finalist that same year David Backes was. 2002 is my senior year. So I felt like I was competitive, and those letters and the recruiting calls, those were all good, but nothing really materialized from it. Then I went and played junior hockey in Green Bay and, you know, talked to a couple more schools, but really the end game for me is growing up, I wanted to be, this pains me to say it, but I wanted to be a Gopher really bad. I wanted to play at Mariucci. I loved Goldie. I mean, you name it, I wanted to be a Gopher. But I learned to hate those golfers playing in Mankato. Now I'm glad I wasn't one. But so when Mankato came knocking, you know, it was a WCHA team, which I thought at the time was the premier conference and where I wanted to be.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was an opportunity to get away from home, just 90 minutes south, and be far enough away, but close enough to where family can shoot down and stuff, and I could shoot back up to the cities. And really, it turned out to just be a perfect fit too for me in terms of my game, because where I would have been a small fish in a big pond at the U, tons of top prospects and probably freshmen every single year that were better players coming in than I would have been as a sophomore, junior, or senior to Mankato, where I was able to jump right on board and develop into a player and get big opportunity. And I don't know that I would have had that with the Gophers. So sure. Certainly it just worked out really well for me.
What did you major in at Mankato?
Well, I was a finance guy. I was on the, I think it's the 12-year plan. I know most people graduate in 4 to 5. It took me 12. So again, if that indicates at all, you know, how dangerous it is that I'm teaching this country's future, that's pretty scary. But I ended up, so I was a finance major. I ended up having to go back and do some of my studies remotely, and the finance was not an option to graduate with remotely. So I pivoted. It's organizational studies into interdisciplinary studies. So I got a degree for the most part in sport management, marketing, and some communication.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. So it worked out. Yeah, it was nice.
Well, that's awesome. Well, you eventually made your way from Mankato to getting signed by the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim. And before you even played a regular season NHL game, you actually won the Stanley Cup in 2007 with the Ducks, and you actually made it into 4 games as part of their cup run, including a game in the Stanley Cup Finals. Like, thinking back on those 4 games that you played in and being part of that cup run, was that all just like a complete blur being so new to the NHL?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a blur because it happened so fast. 2, it was a blur because I think I spent 95% of that time trying to get my heart rate to calm back down. You know? But so, yeah, I leave college. Lots of stories there, but I end up leaving college reluctantly to play for Anaheim, and knowing I was going to play in their top minor league affiliate, the AHL, mm-hmm. and that was in Portland. And I was really naive. I didn't know a lot about professional hockey. I mean, to this day, I hear stories. Agents called me while I was playing college hockey, and they're like, hey, I tried to get you to come, you know, and let me represent you, but you told me straight, you know, right to my face that you had no need for an agent. You were just looking to play college hockey, and you just told me to buzz off more or less, and then here you were 6 months later signing a deal. So I didn't know how all that went. And actually, when I signed my first contract, Anaheim comes to me and they're like, hey, so we want to offer you this deal, but we need to know who to call. Do you have an agent? And I was like, no, I don't have an agent. They're like, do you want us to give you an agent? And I said, that sounds like a terrible idea. So I just hung up the phone and I called a couple people, ended up getting an agent right there. And then I was, you know, to this day, you know, agents, they got it figured out. I call him, he makes a phone call, and boom, we get a deal done. So, then I make my way to Anaheim, play that whole year in the American League. Ironically, this is a funny story. They told me it was in Portland, and I didn't do a bunch of research. I didn't know. And off the top of my head, I thought I was going to Portland, Oregon, just because geographically that makes sense. Right. So California team. There's probably a minor league affiliate on the West Coast, Portland, Oregon. That's where we're headed. Awesome.
New. No.
It was on the complete opposite side of the country. It was Portland, Maine. So yes. Good thing I checked, because I would have headed west, and that would have been a long ride back east. But I played that whole year in the American Hockey League, and lucky for me, our team wasn't that good, so we didn't make the playoffs. And teams that make it, the big clubs, they like it when the minor league team, the affiliate, makes the playoffs, because you can keep guys if you need your depth. You've got guys that are playing in game shape and still have, you know, that timing down, the competitive battle, the juice is going, all that stuff is, you know, still relatively fresh. We lost, so Anaheim's like, well, great. We got to bring all these guys up that maybe will potentially play. So we get the call. We go up to Anaheim. There's probably 4 to 6 of us, and we just practice in the dark, and we're not supposed to be around the team. And somehow I get an opportunity to practice with the big club. One of the guys got hurt, and next thing you know, I'm playing my first game in the West Finals against Detroit. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I remember sitting on the bench for my first game, and – I'm sitting directly next to Timu Solani, and oh, I think, man, he could probably see the veins in my neck pulsing and count to 210 beats a minute, thinking my heart's going to blow up. I was so nervous, and he looks at me and he's like, settle down, kid. It's not a big deal. But at that time, Timu Solani, who was, he had done enough to, you know, to be a Hall of Famer. That was the furthest he had ever been in the playoffs. And that was my first NHL game. So I was sweating it, and I was like, oh, just don't screw this up for Timu. Do not. And then finished that series out and then got one in the final, and that was the way it went.
That's so awesome. Well, you know, and this is the part of the interview where I just turn into Chris Farley and absolutely rube out, because like after the North Stars left Minnesota in 92, I adopted the Devils as my team. And I loved, like, you know, Marty Brodeur, Scott Stevens, all those guys. And, you know, they won some cups along the way, and it was just kind of my team. And lo and behold, Ryan Carter signs with the New Jersey Devils in 2011. And the 2012 playoffs, now ultimately it didn't end with a cup, but that was one hell of a playoff run. And, you know, the Eastern Conference Final Series with the Rangers that year was unbelievable. And you scored the winning goal in the pivotal Game 5 against the Rangers in New York. What was that feeling like to, like, on a huge stage like that, scoring the game-winning goal? And, you know, I mean, I don't have to tell you what Game 5 means in an NHL playoff series. What was that feeling like?
Well, I'm getting goosebumps right now thinking about it and recalling it. But, yeah, I mean, you picked a good team to rube out on. The Devils, yeah, I mean, the history there, you know, winning and then the Battle of the Hudson, you know, mm-hmm. just across the river from the Rangers. And so there was some history that led up to that 2012 year. And then we had that line brawl. I don't know if you guys recall that, too. That was mm-hmm. earlier in the year. And mm-hmm. some blood was shed. And we had some hard feelings for one another. And that playoff run, man, for me in my career, that was probably the most satisfying run and stretch of time for me, and something I reflect on, and really I'm just proud of, because, you know, going into that, well, one, we were a 6 seed, and maybe we shouldn't have been that good. And Florida, team that we actually were better than, the way that the playoffs lined up with points and everything. They were the 3 seed, we were the 6 seed, so we're on the road. We should have beat them more easily than any other club, but they took us to Game 7, and we end up squeaking Game 7 out, some OT thrillers, and that was a phenomenal series. And we roll into Philly and really just kind of steamroll Philly. And then it's the Rangers in the East final, and some bad blood from earlier in the year, the Devils Rangers, just a huge rivalry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, fast forward to Game 5 and what it meant to win that one. Yeah, that was pretty special. And the way that game went, we were up early, I think 3, and the Rangers come storming back to tie it 3-3 in the third. They get a goal, and then just moments later, I find myself on that streak. I get a good pass, you know, on a makeshift line, Kovalchuk and Steven Gianta. And Kovalchuk, now, I loved playing with the guy, but he did, his strength was not forechecking. He didn't like to get the corners. You know, he wanted to get the puck in the scoring areas, and he knew what to do with it when he got it there. But he gets in on a forecheck, gets a puck loose to Gianta. Gianta finds me, and boom, for it. It was probably one of the loudest I've ever heard a building, Madison Square Garden, just before we scored. And then it's also one of the quietest I've ever heard a building. So for it to go like, man, we're behind the eight ball, all of a sudden this is going to turn to, oh my gosh, we just scored that goal. And the only thing you hear are guys on the Devil's bench screaming. It's like you could hear a pin drop. Then we go on to win Game 6. So certainly probably one of the highlights of my career, scoring that goal. And for what it means in the Devils Rangers, you know, their history and their feud, that's pretty special too.
Yeah, I think I went back and watched the goal several times, you know, leading up to talking to you. And one of my favorite things about the goal is immediately after you score it, they show a shot of Tortorella, and he's got like this smirk on his face, and he's just rolling his eyes, and he's like, come on, man. So
yeah. So I'm sure Tortorella didn't, I'm sure part of it was he didn't like it. And we had a good series. My line had a good series before that. And, you know, that was around the time, I think maybe the Bruins just before that, where teams turned into 4-line teams. So before, like Anaheim, you know, I played 4 games, but the 4th line, we really didn't factor and it didn't matter. We played a minimal role. But the Bruins, I think right around 2010, they started to roll 4 lines, and around the league, they started to recognize, hey, when a team is deep like that and the 4th line contributes, you give yourself a much better chance. So the Devils bought into that, and we had a great series against the Rangers. We had scored games prior, multiple points in that series, and that was really a lot coming from a 4th line. So I'm sure he was frustrated in losing, like, not this 4th line again, not these guys, can't they just go away? And then on top of it, I'm sure he probably wasn't thrilled that it was me, because I was involved with all sorts of stuff, with the fight with Dubinsky and breaking his nose earlier in the year, then the line brawl, scoring some big goals, and then doing that one. I'm sure I was a thorn in his side, and he was not happy to see me score it.
That's awesome. Well, my last Rubout question in Devil's Land is just obviously, you know, Marty Brodeur. He, Hall of Famer, you know, by the time you got to play with him, he had already, you know, etched his place in the Hall of Fame. Still had several good years after that, played into his 40s. Many people consider him the greatest goaltender of all time. But what kind of a teammate was Marty? You were with the Devils for 3 years. What was your experience like around him?
Marty was great for a lot of reasons. He was always a calming force. And again, like that 2012 season, we were a 6 seed, but Marty had been there before. He knew it didn't matter. The organization, the culture that they had built there, that was really on Marty too. And he was a big part of all of that. So I came in late in Marty's story, but I was able to pick up on a lot of that stuff. And, you know, as a teammate, Marty was great, very inclusive right off the bat. I mean, if you're going for dinner, you can go with Marty. If you're going for a beer, you can go with Marty. And, you know, again, you said it, Marty's one of the best all time, and I'll echo that. And to be able to just go out and have beers and play alongside a guy like Marty Brodeur, and then, you know, Ilya Kovalchuk and Jaromir Jagr with the Devils, it was great. But mm-hmm. The other thing I learned from Marty was, now, this was a mistake I made, and I alluded to it earlier, and that I didn't set my goals high enough. I just wanted to play Division I hockey. I didn't really think that the NHL was a reality. Even when I played in the NHL, I don't think I set my goals the right way. And Marty, I learned a lot from Marty. He didn't just want to be a good goalie and win some games and win some championships. His goal all along was to be the best goalie that ever played. And he played like it every single day. I mean, he wanted the net. Didn't matter if he played good the night before, bad, confidence, didn't matter. He wanted the net because he knew that, hey, I got to be in the net and I got to win these games if I'm going to be the best all time. And he was just on a different level in terms of setting goals and his ability to achieve them and his mentality. And that's probably the number one thing I take away, having played alongside Marty, is not selling yourself short. And if you set big goals, you can reach them. Because I mean, Marty, he's a good dude, but I mean, he's just an average guy too. Like, let's go out for dinner, let's have a beer, let's hang out. But he could do some extraordinary things in that net.
That's awesome.
Ryan, you were known for being kind of a hard-nosed player and even dropping the mitts a few times. I did some research here. I show that you got into 31 fights. I reviewed all the film here. You got 6 wins, 17 losses, and 8 draws. But obviously you alluded to it earlier here, but probably the most memorable fight that you were in was the line brawl with the New York Rangers on March 19th of 2012. You were lined up with, I think you got Stu Bickel in that one.
Yeah,
Stu.
Tell me some more about that, because there's so many elements that go into what transpired there that day.
I like how you started that off with hard-nosed. I think big-nosed is maybe better. And maybe that, you know, that will illustrate why my record is what it is. But yeah, that line brawl started off. So I'll try to rehash the story quickly. But the Rangers came into our building, Prudential Center, 3 weeks before that, and they started their tough guys. And Zach Parise was on the team at the time, and they ran around the first shift and were very physical. Hitting guys like Parise and Kovalchuk. So I look at my line mates on the left and right, and I say, "Well, guys, I think we have to go out there and respond." So the next shift, I go out there and I end up fighting Brandon Dubinsky. That was a good fight. That's one of those few that I won.
Yes, I have that even as a win here.
Yeah. So I end up breaking his orbital bone or his nose or something, mm-hmm. and he doesn't play again. So then we go into Madison Square Garden. This is Sunday at noon, the NBC game. And Pete DeBoer, our coach, is like, "Yeah, you guys are starting." And I don't think anything of it, because the way it works is the visitor submits the lineup, then the home team submits the lineup, and then we can take a look at it, and then we know what's going on. Well, I see Dubinsky is supposed to be the center, and it's his first game back since I broke his nose 3 weeks before. I got no clue that we're fighting, like no clue what's going on, kind of naive. And I get on the ice and I see Dubinsky all of a sudden sheepishly skate back to the blue line, and then Stu Bickel come up to take the draw. And I was like, what is going on? And Stu's like, "We're going to go." I was like, "Okay, well, yeah, I understand that right now. I get it too. Yeah, I know what's going on." But so then I start yelling at Dubinsky. I was like, "What are you doing on the ice? You shouldn't even be out here. Like, why would your coach put you out here?" I said, I want to beat the wheels off Stu right now, and I'm going to chase you around this ice. So I was actually upset about that. But yeah, then all of a sudden, again, I didn't know what was going on in my wings. They were all having their little conversations too. And before I know it, there's 3 fights going on, and boom. To this day, gosh, I wish we got it. NBC, I don't think they'd ever release it, but I'd like if we could get all the camera angles from that fight. So
yes,
you know, mm-hmm. because obviously the producer was telling them to switch shots, go to this camera, go to that camera. I'd like to see all the feeds and see if we can watch, you know, the fight play out.
Yeah,
because, man, I had a really good start to that fight, and I put Stu down, and I thought we were done. But the way it works, too, is the referees will not jump in on a fight. Mm-hmm. They're above that. So it's just the linesmen. There's only 2 linesmen on the ice, and they're standing next to the other 2 fights. So I let Stu get back up, and all of a sudden he pumps me right between the eyes. Yeah. And that's when Bryce Salvador got upset, and he jumped in. So Bryce actually got the biggest penalty. I think he got 2, 5, and 10 for being a third man in. Mm-hmm. The rest of us just got 5 for fighting. But, yeah, pretty crazy scenario. Some good images coming out of that post-career, some blood walking off MSG, a little bloody. It was cool. It was cool. I got out of that fight, and I don't know. I mean, we talked earlier about that game 5 goal against the Rangers. I had a handful of text messages that night. I don't know that I've ever had more on my phone than after that game. My phone was like a Christmas tree, just ding, 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 lights, you know, you name it. So a lot of people saw that, so it was neat.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, you ultimately ended up signing with the Wild after your Devils career. And I still believe that's the reason Pete DeBoer got fired in December, is because he didn't re-sign you that fall. But in any event, you made it back over to, or you made it over to the Wild. That must have been just like a dream come true scenario to finish out your career in your home state and probably have the opportunity to have a lot of friends and family at a bunch of your games. You know, they're not going to end up at the Prudential Center, but, you know, have a lot of people be able to see you play out your career in Minnesota.
Yeah, no doubt. And as much as I'd like to think that they let Pete DeBoer go and Lou Lamoriello go because they didn't retain me, I don't think that's the case. But to enlighten you on it, I loved being a Devil, and I really wanted to be a Devil. And I had an opportunity to stay there and be a Devil for a handful of years after that. But losing Zach and then Kovalchuk and Marty, where he was at in his career, I knew that I was never going to sign for generational type of money. And for me, I sat down with my wife and I thought, well, you know, sure, we can kick the can down the road, make a good living for a couple of years, but really, what's it all about for me, a guy in my shoes? And it was about winning, and that 2012 run mattered to me. 2007 was a big deal, but I still wanted to win another one to kind of justify. Having only played four games in that first run and that cup with the Ducks, it was kind of an open wound. It was like, man, I don't feel I deserved it, even though now the older I am and the more mature I am, I realize that in some regards, it's probably harder to play an entire year in the American Hockey League and find a way into a lineup in the playoffs and win a Stanley Cup than it is to play the entire year in the NHL. Mm-hmm. In some regards, it's probably more challenging. I just didn't feel that I earned it and I wanted that bad. And the writing on the wall with the Devils was, hey, maybe things around here might get worse before it gets better. And, you know, things can change fast, but that's what I felt and that's what I saw. So ultimately I turned down a deal with the Devils to see if I could chase winning. Because for me, the story, I wanted to tell the story someday at the grandkid on my lap about winning, not about signing a long-term guaranteed deal or something. Right. So I ended up signing a two-way deal here in Minnesota just to chase it. They had gotten Parisi, they had gotten Suter. It was a team on the rise, and the idea of winning a Stanley Cup here at home. My father was a police officer in St. Paul for 30 years. My mother grew up on Grand Avenue. To get a chance to play in St. Paul and win there, I mean, it was too much of a pipe dream to turn down. And then factor in where I was in life, I had young children too. So to be able to bring them home and have relationships grow between grandparents, aunts, uncles, my children, and then play at home, it was a win-win, despite the fact that the contract looked nothing like the one that I said no to.
For sure. Well, after you retired here in, I believe it was 2017 or 18, you started working with the Wild and now Fox Sports North as an analyst. How have you enjoyed staying connected to the game through your new career?
Yeah, so it's really scary. So the way I had to play hockey desperate, because I wasn't overly skilled. I wasn't overly tough, as the statistics show. So I needed to play with desperation and kind of go into areas and do things that other people maybe didn't want to prove and show value. And mentally, I think I recognized that. So I didn't prepare myself for life after hockey on purpose, because I wanted to be desperate to stay in it. And I'm very thankful for that mentality, because I think I'm probably a 2-year talent that was able to carve out 10 years, on that mentality alone. So, but that said, all of a sudden I'm done playing hockey. It's like, well, what the heck am I going to do now? I'm 35 years old. I really don't know what my skills are. Like, people ask you, what are your skills? What do you want to do? It's like, I want to be 10 years younger. I want to go back and play in the NHL. That's what I want to do.
Muck it up.
What are my skills? I can skate, I can shoot, I can hit. You know what? That's how does that transfer into the real world? The reality is I didn't think it did. So I was, in truth, I was a little bit scared on what my future looked like. I was like, I'm 35 with kids and everything else, but I'm in the same spot as a 22-year-old graduating college. Like, I'm so green, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So Now, to get an opportunity to jump in and be around hockey, man, that was so appealing to me because it's like, I know the culture. I know the product. This, I know some of this stuff. I understand the skills that it takes to play hockey and to talk about. And I'm just glad that, you know, I had the confidence to say yes, because the role at first was not something I was comfortable with, you know, putting yourself out there in social media. So often hockey is, you know, it's a guarded sport and we throw cliches around and you protect things and it's more about the team than it is about the individual. So at the start, I wasn't comfortable saying, hey, look at me, right? Like I'm doing this social stuff, follow me, this is great. And but I at least had the confidence to try it and skin thick enough to hear, man, you're awful, right? And to still try it again. But yeah, I mean, I'm still very thankful for the Wild and the opportunity to try to do some of the stuff after. And it's really been a lot of fun to chase. But again, just being around hockey, the people in hockey, it's a place where I'm comfortable, fun. And, you know, I'm willing to test boundaries there a little bit now too, because I trust the people in hockey. And really, I couldn't pinpoint a better scenario for me.
And now you're to the point where you're comfortable wearing like a red clown wig and posting selfie videos. So.
right. My skin's only gotten thicker. Right, exactly. You know, and that's part of it. You know, you learn that, hey, you can do stupid stuff if it's for the right reasons. And some of that stuff is to raise money and awareness for certain things. And, you know, willing to do all that kind of stuff for a greater cause. And those are things that I've learned throughout, you know, this journey, and it's been short so far, just a handful of years from being done playing to in this media gig.
And I also like the little dance like no one's looking video that you did with the whole fam too. So lots of fun.
yeah. You know, and that's part of it too, is just getting comfortable and showing who you really are as a person. And I think that's part of the reason why I enjoy, you know, we talked about the content that we're spitting out or we're trying to with the Wild and bringing out the personality of some of the players, if at all possible, because I mean, I've really had a good time showing people who I am. Like I'm a dude, which it's an acronym for dad of only daughters. So I do daughter things, you know. I don't have Batman toys or anything around the house. I have red Ariel wigs, and that's at my disposal. So those are the kind of videos I got to kick out, you know.
That's awesome.
I like it. Well, you know, getting over to the power trip now. If I remember this correctly, I think it was when you just signed for the 14-15 season here with the Wild. I think one of the guys, I think it was Corey, who was thumbing through the media guide there and saw that you had listed that you listened to the Power Trip. I think that's how the whole connection here started. But when did you start listening to the Fan and the Power Trip more specifically?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So they were like, what's your favorite band? And I was like, gosh, you know, I don't listen to a lot of bands. I listen to talk radio. I'm a dad now. So they're like, well, what do you listen to? And I was like, well, I listen to the Power Trip Morning Show. I'm on my way into the rink. And yeah, I mean, that's what I enjoy. And yeah, so that was in the media guide. And I mean, it wasn't strategic at all. That's honestly what I did. I was like, yeah, that's what I listen to. And,
such a hockey guy answer too.
Yeah.
I listen to the morning show, whatever.
Corey caught wind of it and then eventually jumped on there. And you know, just obviously they have a ton of fun and I'm drawn to that, and they've developed a nice little locker room type of feel / setting, you know, where it's kind of a boys club and they have a good time. They razz each other, but they love each other. And really, I can relate to what it's like in a locker room to what it's like following that show. And I think that's why I was drawn to it and still am, because, man, they just have a blast and they're fun to listen to. And I think you can hear in their shows that they truly are having fun. Like they're not working. Yep. They're having fun.
Yeah, it's authentic.
Yeah, for sure. And of course, we'd be remiss if we did not revisit one of the great lines in Power Trip history when you were in studio with Tommy Olsen.
One of those guys who was looking at you like, wow, good for you. Yeah. Did you like ask him to fire it up once or anything?
Yeah.
Oh, that was brilliant.
Yep, fire that thing up again. So that's locker room talk. Those are conversations I've had in a locker room before. Like, hey, come on, let's give me a sneak peek. You know, I need to know. And Yeah. So, I mean, again, if the comfort to be able to say that too, with that group, I mean, they do all the heavy lifting there, but it, certainly that's why for me drawn to the show, because it is like a locker room.
Yeah.
Well, it's a lot of fun, and we definitely enjoy having you on. And you've made out to Vegas last year since it overlapped with the old Wild trip. That's got to be a fun destination now that Vegas is part of the NHL.
Well, yeah, Vegas, that's one of the, gosh, the scarier but more fun stops. We stay right at a casino, so you can easily lose track of time at the tables and stuff. But that was a fun one. That was before I was broadcasting and had to be live on air. So I think I pulled an all-nighter. We gambled. I went to a little Wayne show at Hakkasan that night, and then that closed down at like 4 in the morning. I think we were broadcasting live at like 4:30 or 5 out there. So I just walked from Hakkasan on over to the Power Trip. So I was thankful that they let me on, because they do have a full lineup there, but the schedule's lined up. That was a lot of fun. That's a night that I'll never forget, because I don't pull a lot of all-nighters, but that one was pretty fun and special. And I was nervous too, because I was kind of tuned up at that time in the morning, nervous that I might let something fly that the FCC wouldn't be all that thrilled about. So super happy that didn't happen. But yeah, that was a great night.
And relatively speaking, you were probably still middle of the pack in terms of sobriety out there at that time. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, it's hard not to have a good time in Vegas.
That's for the best. Sure. What do you gamble on when you're out there?
So, mostly blackjack, because we don't have a lot of the table games here in Minnesota. Mm. But I went out there and I started to play this bubble craps. So it's like I was nervous to go to the craps table because I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
And you can go to bubble craps and you play on your own table and you can place your bets, and I could learn it on my own. And everybody's not hollering and telling you what you should do, what you shouldn't do. So I kind of got addicted to sitting at that bubble craps table and playing. And once I got comfortable enough and understood the game well enough, I jumped over to the big table. So craps is, I think I usually start off with blackjack, but by the end of the night, I'm feeling like winning big, I go to craps.
Well, craps is fun. It's a very social game. Well, right. Hey, thanks so much, Ryan, for joining us. We really appreciate it. Hope things continue to go well for your teaching endeavors at home, and cannot wait to see you back covering the Wild.
Yeah, you and me both. I'm missing hockey, but no, yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. This was a lot of fun, guys. Let's do it again sometime.
All right. Well, that was awesome. So good to hear from Ryan. And it's always cool to talk to somebody that's a Power Trip fan themselves, you know, just a fanboy as well. So Ryan's a cool dude. And I failed to mention, it was like one of those notes that you have that you kind of forget to bring up during the course of an interview. But, you know, we were talking about Martin Brodeur and the great teammate that he was for Ryan. But did you realize that Ryan scored both of his first two goals in the NHL against Brodeur?
Wow, I did not know that. That's crazy.
It was a game back in 2008, because, of course, he won the Cup with the Ducks in 2007 before he even played a regular season game. But his first regular season was 07-08, and it was sometime like February of 08. And the Ducks were playing at the Devils, and Carter scored two first period goals, and the Ducks won 2-1. So Carter had both goals, number one star of the game, both against Marty Brodeur. That's one hell of a way to start a career.
That is insane. Wow. Yeah. And like you ran on about that that playoff goal that he had to break the 3-3 tie there, and that's kind of locked in my brain. I remember where I was, kind of a moment, that kind of a goal, so that was pretty cool.
That was so huge. I remember what a dominating, like, you know, he really, I mean, he was fourth on the Devils in goals during that playoff run. I mean, you know, and you're talking about, you know, a team that had like Kovalchuk and, you know, big scorers on the team. And he was fourth in scoring on the team. He had five goals during the playoff run, and a lot of them were really clutch goals like that. I mean, that, you know, game five, game winning goal like that is really huge. And so that's why I put it for the liner to open the show. Cause,
never get sick of hearing calls like that, especially Doc Emmerich, man. You got to get a Doc Emmerich call with your name on a big goal, and like that is that's something to treasure. So yeah, thank you so much, Ryan, for your time, and
yes.
He's definitely a good storyteller. I just love hearing hockey stories like that from guys like him. So
you got to love hockey guys, especially as two hockey guys ourselves. Yeah, that was great.
Absolutely. So much fun. All right. Well, that will do it for this week's show. We'll be back again next week with a regular show. We got some fun and interesting content coming up for you guys over the summer. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, Dave, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at PowerTripQuotes.
And I'm, of course, at PowerTripBets. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Bets and Quotes podcast. Be sure to give us a rating on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And if you think we're hideous, please lie.